Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, May the 2nd. This hour, we will welcome in Dr. Steve Kagan. He is Wisconsin's U.S. Representative for the 8th Congressional District, which covers most of northeastern Wisconsin, including Appleton and Green Bay. And we will talk about some of the issues that he's been working on, from cleaning up the Fox River to getting healthier school lunches in our schools to the latest on the war in Iraq. And whether he is your U.S. representative or not, we welcome your questions or comments about the issues before Congress, the issues that you want on his radar screen. We welcome your calls at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We try to invite all of our congressional representatives to join us from time to time on our Ideas Network programs throughout the year. Last month, we heard from U.S. Representative Tammy Baldwin, a Democrat from Madison. This month, we are happy to welcome in Dr. Steve Kagan, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 8th District. He is also an allergist and an assistant clinical professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. It's good to be with you.
Thanks very much for being with us. And I do want to talk about a number of items I know you're working on that are of particular interest to northeastern Wisconsin. But first, I want to talk about the headline in the news this morning. We heard President Bush yesterday, last night, in fact, veto this war funding bill that includes the timetable for troop withdrawal, saying this.
I recognize that many Democrats saw this bill as an opportunity to make a political statement about their opposition to the war. They've sent their message, and now it is time to put politics behind us and support our troops with the funds they need.
So, is that what Congress is going to do now, Representative Kagan?
Well, I believe the president does need our help. He needs our help to support our troops, not just before and during being in harm's way, but after they come home as well. And this bill that we put before him would do just that. It provided for our troops at all times.
And now that he vetoed it, what's next?
I think you'll find that there'll be a couple of bills that Chairman Obie will bring forward to try and separate the issues. I think the president was very concerned that he looked at it as though there was pork in the bill, when in fact what we had was we'd provided for the necessary needs of people here at home and also overseas.
Yeah. But he, in particular, was upset with this timetable and conditions that were in the bill, saying that Congress was trying to micromanage the war, and that's what the generals are supposed to be doing.
Well, I would call that political rhetoric, and I certainly don't feel like a politician, but I've become one. I still feel like myself from Appleton, Wisconsin, like other people I know, and timetables aren't a bad idea. In raising my children, we said, okay, curfew is 12 o'clock. When I spoke with Commander Petraeus, he was not upset about the fact that we had a timetable. He could then stand before Malachi, the elected leader of the Iraqi government, and say, look, you know, I'd like to stay here forever, but that Congress, they want to bring an end to our involvement in this religious civil war.
Yeah.
So I think timetables are a good thing.
In any case, it sounds like the president wants to get some sort of compromise with Democrats in Congress, and maybe he would accept a bill that would not only provide the funding, but have some sort of conditions, benchmarks that need to be met with the war in Iraq.
Well,
is that where you are now, too?
We put in the president's own benchmarks, so when he vetoed this bill, he was basically telling the American people he doesn't agree with himself. So the benchmarks that were in the bill that he vetoed are the very ones that he created. But also, this bill, which has a label, H.R. 1591, it set a date of October 1 to begin withdrawing our troops. It didn't set an end date to that withdrawal, but it started the process of an exit strategy. It also provided for $90 billion for our troops. It provided for Katrina relief, for Afghanistan, for Iraq, for food aid, for our farmers, for their disastrous year they had last year. You know, when I came to Washington, I thought I could just work on health care. That was our major problem, but there are so many other problems to work on that we needed to create a bill that would provide for many different solutions to all the complex problems we're facing, and unfortunately, the president has vetoed it.
Well, we'll talk about some of those other problems in just a moment after we check our weather forecast, and we'll also take calls for Dr. Steve Kagan, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, which covers northeastern Wisconsin, including the cities of Green Bay and Appleton. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, 16 minutes past 7 o'clock now. Coming up after 8 o'clock, I'll be welcoming in a former CIA analyst, Ray McGovern, who says that former CIA Director George Tenet should give back his Medal of Freedom and should donate much of the proceeds from his new book to the victims of the Iraq War or the families of the victims of the Iraq War. We'll talk about George Tenet's unhappiness over going down in history as Slam Dunk Tenet coming up after 8 o'clock this morning. Right now, we're talking with Steve Kagan. He is Wisconsin's U.S. representative from the 8th Congressional District. He's talking with us about issues before Congress and issues that he is working on and answering your questions about the issues that matter to you. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. One caller first for you, Dr. Kagan, Mike in Lancaster. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
I would just like to point out that many of us feel that this current administration has mismanaged the war and many other things, and we would like to know if the Congress will provide the checks and balances that have been lacking in the last few Congresses.
Well, there's a very clear difference between the 110th Congress, of which I'm a member, and last Congress of 109. And the difference is, look at the numbers of hearings that we've already had. Over 160 open hearings where people in the administration had to come forward and testify under oath as to what's been happening. I participated in a hearing on Deepwater where a construction company that built 8 ships for our nation built the ships in such a way that they couldn't hold the water out. And I asked for the money back. So we have an opportunity in Congress now to ask questions which the previous Congress did not do. It's our constitutional duty to provide oversight and to be able to call the administration to task to provide those checks and balances. And I think you'll be very impressed with our record thus far.
Thank you, Mike. Howard in Polk County. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. The question I have is, this is called a military spending bill, but they attach so many other things to it, including assistance for the farmers and other industries. Why are they attached to this, and they call it a military funding bill? And why can't those other things be on separate bills?
Howard, that's a very fair question, but I would ask a question in return. Should we not provide for those sufferers who, in the Gulf Coast, needed $6.9 billion from the damage from Katrina? Should we not provide food aid to Afghanistan and the Iraqi people, or our own farmers, or our own homeland security? And what about children's health care? We funded $650 million in this bill that was vetoed by the president, specifically to provide health care to children here in our country. This is how the legislative process works. In order to move things forward, sometimes you have to have a bill that has more than you'd like in it. And this is the bill that did pass Congress and did pass the Senate. So the voice of the people was, this is what they wanted.
Yeah, the funding of those other issues and worthy causes, was that was put in there to get the votes needed to pass it, though, right?
That's how you get legislation together.
Yeah. So when Howard says, why not have these as separate bills, it's because you needed those in there to pass this bill.
That's what Congressman Obie has said. Many other congressmen and women have said the same thing. In order to pass a bill, you have to have the votes.
Yeah. Anything in there that would have directly affected Wisconsin that's now, vetoed?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Senior care. Senator Cole and Congressman Obie had a provision in this bill that would have guaranteed the survival of senior care for several years. So what the president did, in my view, was heartless in that we had produced in Wisconsin the best prescription drug plan available in America, and it was vetoed by the president. So we're working hard across the party lines in our delegation to make sure that senior care does survive, and I think Governor Doyle is doing the best job possible to work with the current administration to at least put it through for the end of the year.
Yeah. Do you have any reaction, Representative Kagan, to former CIA Director George Tenet's claims in his book that the Bush administration went to war for flimsy reasons and also being upset that they used his slam dunk comment as a reason, you know, to go to war?
Well, first of all, I would commend him for his years of service. I thank him for his service, but it appears to be too little too late. I recall he was sitting right behind Colin Powell at the UN, so he sat behind him, and every word that Secretary of State Powell had to say was symbolically verified by Mr. Tenet. So I think he's got a lot of questions to answer for himself and for the American people.
We'll go to more calls in just a moment, but I did want to talk to you about this public hearing on the Fox River cleanup that you're sponsoring this weekend?
Yes, this Saturday at the Fort Howard Theater, the Bemis Center at St. Norbert College, we'll be having an open hearing from noon until 2 o'clock, at which experts in hydrology and river science, basically, will bring forward their views on whether or not we should cover up the PCB contamination in the Fox River or take it out altogether. And this will be an opportunity for the EPA, because the leader of the EPA in the project will be there from Chicago, and the Wisconsin DNR leaders will be there as well. So the public has an opportunity to hear yet again that there might be a better way to do things for the Fox River other than to cover up the pollutants that are there. Keep these two facts in mind. The PCB contamination extraction project in the Fox River in Green Bay is the largest PCB contaminated sediment project in the United States, and it's an experiment. This is the first time that a navigation channel is said to be closed or proposed to be closed while trying to do so. So they've never really capped or covered up PCB sediments in a navigable river. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that everyone has all the information possible. I'd like to hear all the information possible and make an accurate diagnosis of the condition, if you'll pardon a medical analogy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's the choice, cover it up or take it out altogether, and it looks like experts are leaning toward, or you're leaning toward, taking it out altogether?
I don't know how. Mm-hmm. Put it this way, everyone agrees on one thing, mm-hmm. that if you cover up or cap the PCB sediments, it's a temporary fix. It is not permanent. No one believes this is a permanent solution. And the last thing I think we should do is to pass on this heritage to our children and grandchildren, that they'll have cancer-causing agents yet in their river and in their fish.
Okay, so that's this Saturday from noon to 2 at
Fort Howard Theater at St. Norbert's in De Pere.
And we will go next to Art in Milwaukee. Hi, Art, you're on the air.
Representative Kagan, thanks for your service. Appreciate
it. Good morning, Art.
Including your leadership in terms of the trying to end the Iraq war.
It's very difficult to turn off a war. We learned that from our experience with Vietnam, but it's very difficult, Art.
Representative Kagan, what I'd like to ask you about is what your position is in terms of Congress's potential move to restore some kind of normal relations between the U.S. and Cuba, and particularly the right of U.S. people to travel to Cuba. The Bishop of Green Bay, when the Pope was in Cuba, came back and said that our policy towards Cuba and the embargo was a disgrace. Toby Roth, a very conservative former congressperson from your district, after he was in Congress, went to Cuba and said our policy was a total mistake and was counterproductive. And the governor of Nebraska and other conservative Republicans have been to Cuba to work on opening agricultural trade. But meanwhile, this administration continues to prevent academics, prevent any kind of exchange, prevent church people from going to Cuba. And Charlie Rangel and Jeff Flake, who's Rangel, of course, is head of House Ways and Means Committee, and Jeff Flake, who's a very conservative Republican from Arizona, are co-sponsoring legislation to repeal the travel ban so U.S. citizens have a right to travel and exchange with people in Cuba. And I'm wondering if you have a position on that and if you'd be willing to join with them in co-sponsoring that legislation.
Well, I would ask a question in return. What is the essential difference between communist China and Cuba? Are they not both socialistic in their orientation? And are we not doing business with China? Do we not have the freedom to travel to China and receive students in return? I think it's time to ask those questions and to say, you know, they're our neighbor. We should communicate with them. There's nothing wrong with communication. I'll be happy to take a look at Chairman Rangel's bill.
Thank you, Art, for the call. Randy and Marinette. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Doc. How you doing?
Doing all right, Randy.
Long time no see. I'm curious what's going to be done in this next Congress to prevent all schools in our country from failing in 2014 through No Child Left Behind provisions.
Well, I've been saying this for a number of years, that the No Child Left Behind idea is fantastic. The problem is that it hasn't been adequately and fully funded. And the other problem technically is that teachers are now having to test students, and they're not testing the students serially year after year. So the testing methodology is flawed. So No Child Left Behind has to be repaired. It has to be fixed and fully funded. And I think it's not just the teachers that are saying that, but parents as well. So, and now you've got a different government that believes in educating our children. After all, if we get education right, everything else will follow. But if we get it wrong, absolutely nothing else will matter.
I'm looking at some news here that you were traveling around to a bunch of schools around the state talking about the nutritional value of food in our public schools, and you know whether our school lunches and breakfasts are up to snuff and junk food in schools and that sort of things. What are you working on?
Well, I was very fortunate to earn a chair on the Agriculture Committee, and as a subcommittee, there's a committee on operations and oversight that oversees the programs called the Food Stamp Program, Women, Infants, and Children, the National School Lunch Program, the Breakfast Program. So I have an opportunity as a physician to bring my expertise and experience to help change the meal plan. And rather than really talking about the billions of dollars that we're spending, and keep this in mind, Joy, about 60% of the agriculture budget is spent on these food programs. So let's not talk about the money first. Let's talk about the content of the food going into the mouths of our children. I think it's unfortunate that more and more children in Northeast Wisconsin and across our state are now qualifying for meals at school. When I went to school in Appleton, nobody had meals at school. We brought our lunch. A generation later, when we raised our four children at Jefferson Elementary in Appleton, there were about 15% of the children that required meals at school. When I went back there last week Friday to serve breakfast to the children, 29% of the children qualify for breakfast and for lunch at school. And they've done a tremendous job of innovating and providing for the children. You know, if kids don't have a good breakfast, they're not going to be in a position to learn. When you're hungry, it's hard to concentrate. So we have about 37 million people who are in poverty in this country. Many of them have children, and these children need our help.
We're talking with U.S. Representative Steve Kagan, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, talking to him about some of the issues that he's working on and some of the latest news from Washington, including the news about the funding bill and the war in Iraq and the timetable for withdrawing troops. And we'll welcome your question for him as well. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Wednesday, May the 2nd. We are talking with Steve Kagan, who is Wisconsin's U.S. representative from the 8th Congressional District, which covers most of northeastern Wisconsin, including the cities of Green Bay and Appleton. Dr. Steve Kagan, a Democrat, is also an allergist and an assistant clinical professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. We're talking with him about some of the issues that he's working on, from cleaning up the Fox River to getting healthier food in our public schools, and also talking with him about issues currently before Congress, including the latest on the war funding bill with the troop withdrawal timeline that President Bush vetoed yesterday. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. A few more callers on that Iraq war funding bill first before we move on to other issues. Scott in Menasha, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
Morning, Steve. I'm not so sure I do agree with a timetable. It's I mean, how do you determine when a war or this project is going to be, you know, over? But I think it's too bad the president didn't follow his own advice, because wasn't it 4 or 5 years ago when he gave Saddam and his two sons 48 hours to get out of Iraq?
That's a good point.
He started dropping the bombs right after the 48 hours was up, and it's been a downhill since then.
Well, I happen to believe in timetables. I think it's a good idea to have them. And after all, we've already won the war. We took down Saddam Hussein. He was a very evil dictator. He did some terrible things. And we replaced him with three freely elected governments. So it's up to the Iraqi people to determine what they'd like to do in their own future. In my opinion, after speaking to officials out here and to generals, military commanders, and speaking to political scientists and people who've been in and out of Iraq and the entire Middle East, I believe in the end there'll be Kurdistan in the north, and it simply remains to be seen how the Sunni and Shiite people are going to solve their difficulties. Are they going to have a conversation, or are they going to continue to harm one another and become violent? So I think we've done our job, and we should declare victory again and say good luck, and we'll be happy to help you from the sidelines. But our troops, as brave as they are, as courageous and as skilled as they have been, do not belong in the middle of a religious civil war.
Thank you, Scott. Lauren in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, a couple of things for the doctor. The attitude expressed by him, and which is concretized in the actions of the Democratic Party, seen by tens of millions of Americans who will vote Republican in this election, but also independents, as the actions of a party of surrender, a party of treason to the United States, and also a party of aiders and abettors to Islamofascists. What they are trying to do by asking for the withdrawal of our troops from Iraq, in the meantime, like the doctor just conceded, imagining that Iraq, which is a conception of the peace conference in Paris, might break into three different states, they are actually furthering the birth of another Afghanistan, where Al-Qaeda will have a basis to again attack the United States.
All right, Lauren, let's get a response from Representative Kagan.
Well, thank you, Lauren, for your point of view. I respect your freedom to express yourself. I don't share your opinion. I think it was extremely poor judgment on the part of this administration to get involved in the Iraqi situation in the first place. I don't believe that the Iraqi people want us there. That's what the polling of the Iraqi people says. And basically what President Bush has done is, it couldn't have been done in 1,000 years by any of the foes that we have. He has united our enemies against us just as certainly as he's divided us from our own friends. So I think it was poor judgment all the way around on this administration that took us to war in Iraq. And I respectfully disagree with you, but I don't think I've got the wrong attitude. I think it's good to ask questions. I think it's very important in our democracy, in our republic, to hold people accountable for their actions and their decision-making. That's what the election last November was all about.
Thank you, Lauren. Milton in West Allis. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. It was great that Lauren called right before me, because Lauren is a political pro wrestler, and everybody in this whole war resolution thing, including the media, is just putting on this massive pro-wrestling facade, working everybody to a frenzy. You know, everybody thinks that, you know, the Democrats are trying to force the president to bring the troops home, and that the president is heroically trying to, you know, keep the Islamo-fascist terrorists over there and not coming here. And what it boils down to is that a bill has been sent to the president that gives the president every single war dollar he wants, and probably more, along with a non-binding resolution. There is no bringing the troops home. It's a non-binding resolution, and everybody is getting heated up over what I call political pro wrestling. It's not real.
Well, I would say there is some truth to what you say in terms of there being political theater, but let's all be very mindful of the fact that it's politicians that will determine who lives and who dies. This last week, I lost a constituent, a 21-year-old, Nick Ryle, from Shiocton. This is a violent area. People are serving in harm's way. So I think politicians determine who lives and who dies, not just by going to war, but also by denying access to affordable health care, which is the very reason I entered politics in the first place. But you'll see a lot of rhetoric in the newspapers, radio, and television by what people commonly refer to as talking heads. But the facts on the ground are these. We have 142,000 brave Americans in harm's way, and there are 122,000 contractors, private no-bid contractors, in Iraq as well. So those are the profiteers from this war. It's not necessarily the Iraqi people.
And we will talk about other issues, including health care, in a moment. But lots of people, Representative Kagan, do want to talk about this current political battle going on over.
Sure.
Tom and Sabisky is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Kagan.
Good morning, Tom.
I voted for you when you ran for the House, and glad that you're in there. I agree with you on the timetables. The other question is once we get out of Iraq, we're going to need a diplomatic end to the situation over there. And I was wondering, how do you propose to go about doing that, to get everybody, the Europeans, the Chinese, all the nations together to get that thing under control, and probably even Iran and Syria and Jordan and Israel?
I think, Tom, it's the most complex problem facing the entire globe. It's all about bringing people together, and that starts by listening. And if there's any failing of this administration, it has been the failure to listen, and that has led to a number of poor judgments. They don't listen to their own State Department, to their own CIA, to their own counselors, and so I think it's a failure of leadership in terms of listening. And if we listen to our neighbors and our fellows across the Atlantic, not just Britain, but everybody else, we can come together, and there's a better way of solving these problems than by going to war. I believe there are three ways to solve problems. The first way is by going to war or becoming violent, and that never really solves the problem. The next way is to have mediation and have some discussions where you may give up something that you value to get something back, but in the end, the next generation comes along and wants that valuable item back. The real way to solve problems is to begin to fashion a conversation where you can identify a shared value with your neighbor or with your foe and build a bridge on that conversation and your shared values. We have to ship our values overseas, not our soldiers.
We're talking with Steve Kagan. He is a U.S. representative, Democratic U.S. representative, representing Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, which covers most of northeastern Wisconsin, including Green Bay and Appleton. Dr. Steve Kagan is an allergist and an assistant clinical professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin, talking with us about issues before Congress, issues that he's working on, and answering your questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 8 o'clock, coming up after 8. According to our next guest, a former CIA analyst, George Tenet is unhappy about going down in history as slam dunk Tenet, and he should be. And he should give back his Medal of Freedom, and he should also donate proceeds from his book to Iraq war victims and families. We'll talk more about that coming up after 8. Right now, we're talking with U.S. Representative Steve Kagan, Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, talking with us about issues that he's working on and other issues before Congress. We'll get back to the Iraq war funding bill in just a moment, but let's go on to some other issues now. George in Rubicon is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Dr. Kagan.
Good morning, George.
Dr. Kagan, I'm very glad that somebody from Wisconsin is finally on the House Agriculture Committee. I'm a third-generation dairy farmer in Dodge County, Wisconsin. I was wondering if you've had a chance to formulate any ideas of how agriculture in general, and I suppose dairy farmers in specific, might be treated in the next farm bill.
I think you'll be very pleased. We have a chairman, Colin Peterson, who understands agriculture deeply. I've been going to school on it and listening to dairy farmers across the state and listening to everyone. I think you'll see a 2007 farm bill that looks much like the 2002. We don't want to damage your economy. And at the same time, we want to make sure that the milk program is provided for, not at 22 or 24%, but back up to where it belongs. And we also want to see markets that are functional. We want to see a milk order that's supported by everyone. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we would like to decrease your overhead as well. I want to knock down your health care costs and your energy bills.
Well, I'd appreciate that. Do you favor a single federal milk marketing order?
I think that the country isn't ready for that just yet. We have to get California to come our way. Right now, as you know, California is not in the milk order, and we need to move toward that end.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, George, for the call. We also did get a caller who couldn't hold on but was interested in what you had to say about school lunches and school breakfasts and wanted to know if you're doing anything to make sure that those meals are as healthy as they can be.
Absolutely. The Institute of Medicine came out with a study last week very strongly proposing that fruits and vegetables, low-calorie counts, and low-fat foods are offered to children, not just at breakfast, but at lunch. And so I think you'll see a movement toward that end. I don't want to claim to be ahead of the curve here, but in 1966, when I was student council treasurer, I spent $250 to put an apple machine in Appleton High School hallways, and it got me in a lot of trouble because the football team said, "Hey, Kagan, we want a Coca-Cola machine."
Yeah, so, you were ahead of the curve there. You're also sponsoring or co-sponsoring legislation about getting junk food out of schools?
That's right. I think that our schools shouldn't be the marketplace for foods that are not best for your health. And I still believe from my medical training that you are exactly what you eat. And if it goes in your mouth, it may end up in your coronary arteries, and it may damage your health, especially if you're allergic and especially if you're a diabetic.
Yeah. I see here that you did send out some postcards to families in your district to ask them about issues that were important to them, and apparently health care overwhelmingly was important to your constituents.
Joy, it was the issue that just rang out. It's number one, it's number two, it's number three. We sent out a questionnaire to 130,000 households in my district. And ordinarily, if you get a 3% return, it's a big return. We had over 11.5% return. Over 15,000 postcards came back, and 8 out of 10 of these cards had personal notes. For example, Elaine from Peshtigo wrote, quote, "I'm soon an 80-year-old woman and a widow. My husband and I farmed, and we certainly had hard times the first years. But the years now are harder for old people. Oil companies make a huge profit. The CEOs make so much more money than any man on earth is worth. And the pill makers are taking in huge profits with no consideration for our old people." Close quotes. People need affordable health care. They have to have access to health care. It is the issue that will separate the parties that are going for the presidency. It will certainly separate the candidates in both primaries during the presidential run. I came to Washington to seek affordable health care by guaranteeing several things. First, I want open disclosure of all prices in health care everywhere in the country. I want every citizen to get the same discount. Now, that means if there's a drug company selling a pill in Mexico City for $1, that's the price it should be in L.A. and Madison and New York and everywhere else in between. So we have to have open disclosure and pricing that's open and fair so every citizen gets the same discount. And most importantly, we have to have a single nation, 300 million strong, a single risk pool that will allow for leveraging down of the prices. Just as the success of senior care demonstrated, we can do it nationally, and Wisconsin can lead the way.
Thanks to George. Brad in Green Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Hello, Doctor. We really appreciate you being on this morning. It's been interesting.
Thank you, Brad.
The question, or really what I'd like to hear, is what types of initiatives will Congress be working on as far as renewable energy concerns go? I'm interested both in the big corporate renewable energy programs, but also residential programs, too.
Well, we've already taken action in this regard. We have created some legislation that will repeal the benefits to big oil in terms of their tax breaks. And we'd like to invest in renewable sources of energy. We'd like to favor. We can't grow our way out of this energy crisis. Let's be clear about that. You can't grow enough corn. You can't make enough ethanol to grow our way out. But it will help significantly to reduce our dependency on foreign sources of oil. So we have to invest in renewable sources of energy, solar, wind. I think we should invest in nuclear, even though that's a short-term fix. Ultimately, we have to become an energy-independent nation, and we do that by having Congress stand up and be bold and say, look, instead of spending $100 billion over in the sands of Iraq, let's spend it to become an energy-independent nation so we may not need their oil over there in the first place.
An email from Jessica in Green Bay wants to know, do you have any plans to focus on improving and protecting the Great Lakes from invasive species, pollution, and habitat depletion?
Absolutely, yes. I'm honored to serve on the subcommittee that overlooks invasive species in our Great Lakes, and I was pleased to be able to chair the subcommittee for the testimony of experts regarding invasive species. We're doing everything we can to keep the Asian carp out of our waterways. We've got to invest in electrical grids that will keep them from migrating from the Mississippi up into our riverways and our Great Lakes. And at the same time, we have to invest in the technologies to clean the ballast water in transnational shipping. So when a ship comes in and the ballast water is released, they don't bring in a new infection, so to speak. I look at the invasive species much like the germ theory. In the beginning of the germ theory, doctors didn't even believe that they had germs on their hands, that they were transmitting an infection from one patient to the next. And in the same way, a ship can bring in an infection, an invasive species, from their waterways overseas here into the Great Lakes. And we have to work not just in Congress, but with Canada and members of all shipping lanes to see that we develop technologies to prevent that.
I'm not sure if there are any in the northeastern Wisconsin area of Wisconsin, but there were immigration rights rallies in Milwaukee, Madison, Racine, many others across the country, people who were rallying for comprehensive immigration reform. What's the latest on that and your position on that?
Well, the Congress has a number of bills that are being written. I'm not on those committees. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that any immigration bill that's put forward by the Democrats will be tough. It will have teeth in it because we really do believe that you should obey all the laws. There should be no amnesty and no cutting in line. If you are speeding on your way into work today, Joy, and you get a ticket, you're outside the law. You pay a fine and you get right with the law. And there should be fines that are significant and substantial. You shouldn't cheat to become a citizen.
Next, we'll go to Mike in St. Lawrence. Hello, Mike.
Yeah, morning, Joy. Morning, Doctor.
Yeah, morning, Mike.
I agree with everything you've been saying this morning. I get the junk food out of the schools. When I was in school, we didn't have any vending machines whatsoever. I mean, we just had healthy food. And same thing with the Great Lakes. One recommendation, I've been thinking about this for days. The Democrats, instead of talking about supporting their troops or not supporting the troops, they should be talking about defunding the war. Change the semantics. I mean, switch it on the Republicans and switch it on Bush, because it's not about, there's not one soldier of ours over there who doesn't want to be home with his wife and his family and his kids. So supporting the supporting the troops thing is just, it's just a diversion as far as I'm concerned. They should talk about defunding the war and set timelines up for defunding. Yeah. In other words, July we're going to cut 20 million, and in August we're going to cut another 30 million. Right? So by the time you get to next October, the war is defunded. It has nothing to do with supporting or not supporting the troops.
Yeah. Is that the way you can get the troops home, Representative Kagan?
Well, in the first place, it's the commander-in-chief, it's President Bush, that can end this involvement in this religious civil war immediately. He's the only person that can do so. He's the commander-in-chief. And as long as our troops are in harm's way, we have to make certain they have the armament and the protection and the food and the support that they require to protect them. And just as importantly, when they come home, they have to have health care available to them in a timely manner, and it's got to be the highest quality available. Now, when many of our troops came home, there are waiting lines. In Green Bay, the clinic is filled up. We need to do something to provide for our troops when they come home. And people aren't really aware of this, but my wife, Gail, has been working very hard. They sort of got a two-for-one when I got elected, because She's been working hard with the spouses of other congressmen and women to see to it that the veterans get the care they need, not just in our district, but across the country. So I think it's important to support our troops. And just as Mike said, the president, just as he did in 2003 on May 1st, can stand before the cameras and declare, we've won the battle for Iraq and we can come home. He can make that statement.
Yeah, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. It was an interesting hour. We really appreciate your time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Joy. Have a good day.
U.S. Representative Steve Kagan, Democrat from Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, including Green Bay and Appleton. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.